Breaking right now, two students accused of bringing guns to two different schools. Where the guns were found, including an extended magazine.
Pack your umbrella. Rain is on the way. Wind showers could impact your weekend plans.
A sinkhole suddenly appears underneath a Raleigh house, forcing the people who live there to leave. While the property owner says the city needs to step up and fix the hole. Then, North Carolina schools have been removing books from their libraries. I go in-depth on the growing efforts by parents to curate the books our children are reading in schools.
As we take a live look at the big radar right now, look at all of this. This is rain coming our way tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. I'm Deborah Morgan.
And I'm Dan Haggerty. The clouds will be moving in tonight, and then we have some scattered showers popping up right around St. Patrick's Day. Meteorologist Kat Campbell in the WRL Severe Weather Center timing this all out for us, Kat.
I don't think St. Patrick's Day will be a washout. That's the good news. Just a small chance for showers during the day. But by tomorrow evening, we expect rain to begin to move in, and the rain will be widespread by tomorrow night. By the time we get to 9 o'clock, 100% chance for rain. For the 5 o'clock commute, though, about a 40% chance and only a 20% chance during the afternoon. It's quite a bit of rain that we have on the way as well. About half an inch to an inch of rain will be possible. The heaviest rain is going to come tomorrow night, likely after 8, 9 o'clock, and continue overnight into the early morning hours on Saturday. Ahead of the rain, it's going to be warm and windy. 70 degrees our forecast high, and a strong wind out of the south before our cold front arrives. That cold front brings big changes for the weekend. I'll have a closer look at your weekend forecast and a town-by-town look at when the rain arrives where you live on Futurecast coming up.
Lots of changes to talk about this time of year. Kat, thanks.
Now we're following some breaking news after guns were found at two Durham schools. New tonight, reaction from a district leader after students were arrested in both cases. WREL's Monica Casey is live outside the Durham Public Schools headquarters after speaking with the board chair. Monica.
Well, the school board chair confirms both of these arrests came from anonymous tips to Durham Public Schools' Text a Tip line. The school resource officer at Lowe's Grove Middle School got a tip about an armed robbery of a student happening on campus. The suspect was another student. That 14-year-old had a handgun with an extended magazine and that victim's property. In a separate incident, SROs at Hillside High School got a tip about a student planning to bring a gun on campus. They searched his vehicle and found a handgun inside. School Board Chair Bettina Umstead tells me this is a serious problem.
Really shocked and alarmed and saddened by what is happening right now in our schools and also in schools across the state. I think the level of young people that have access to weapons or figuring out how to bring those weapons to campus is just really alarming to me.
Due to his age, the name of the 14-year-old has not been released. In the case of the incident at Hillside High School, 18-year-old Zadi Obadiah Woodson was charged with possession of a stolen firearm, possession of a stolen firearm on educational property, and carrying a concealed firearm. He posted a $5,000 bond and has been released. Deborah?
Monica Casey, live in Durham. Thanks, Monica.
You can now sign up for a text alert system in Wake County that will inform you of instances of police brutality. It was started by a local activist. WRL's Sarah Kruger explains the motivation behind it and why some worry it could make situations more dangerous.
The texting service works two ways. You can send in tips about police brutality, and you can be informed about the incidents. Right now, it's just here in Wake County, but ultimately, its founder wants to take it statewide.
When you get a text through Code Blue Brutality Alerts, its creator, Kerwin Pittman, hopes it'll do two things: inform you of what's happening in your community and encourage you to go to the scene.
I'm not saying citizens should be vigilantes and try to physically restrain law enforcement, but what I am saying is they need to be there to put eyes on the situation and what's going on.
I think it's irresponsible.
Rick Armstrong with the union representing Raleigh police officers fears the mass texting system will make situations more dangerous for everyone involved.
When an officer's dealing with a subject for whatever reason, they do need more people on the scene to create, you know, a mob scenario, and it could really create a lot of problems.
This app is about accountability. And so if the officers are following along to policy and procedure accordingly, then it shouldn't be no issue with anything.
Pittman acknowledges, though, that not everyone who signs up for the text will have good intentions.
And we'll honestly try to text in tips that turn out to be false. And so we have a thorough team who will be vetting these tips that come in, pull police reports, listen to scanners.
Armstrong believes between body cameras and dash cameras, there are plenty of accountability mechanisms for officers already in place. He says the union will take a closer look at the new system and its possible implications.
As a union, we need to decide what steps we need to take to protect the police officers, to protect the citizens.
To sign up, you text JUSTICE to this 984 number. Pittman says since launching yesterday, about 100 people have registered. Sarah Krueger, WRAL News, Raleigh.
School leaders say a teenager hit by a car while getting off a bus in Halifax County is undergoing a big surgery. The victim was Tillman Mitchell, a 10th grader at the Halawasaponi Tribal School. Staff held a healing session today to help other students cope with this. 51-year-old Howard Lee is charged with hitting Mitchell with his Tesla. He's charged with passing a stopped school bus and reckless driving. And coming up on our late news, hear from the teenager's family for the very first time since that accident.
A massive sinkhole has formed under this house in the historic Oakwood neighborhood in Raleigh. This is a bird's eye view from it with Drone 5, as you can see. It forced the people who live there out of their home. WRAL's Luke Notstein spoke with the owner and explains how the city of Raleigh is helping.
A fence surrounding this duplex on East Lane Street is adorned with signs that say danger, keep out, and no trespassing. That's because a large sinkhole has formed in the backyard of the property. Drone 5 video shows the extent of the damage.
The house will have to be removed to be able to access a repair to that pipe in the back because it's everything back there is now unstable and there's no access from the rear or sides of it.
Alan Jerkowski owns the property. I spoke to him over the phone today.
The house itself sits on pretty unstable soil. But again, it was built in the 1930s, and that's sort of just what they did.
People were living in the duplex at the time the sinkhole started forming. Jerkowski had to terminate their leases because it wasn't safe for anyone to live here. So Jerkowski reached out to the city of Raleigh for help. The city has a storm water management program that has put this project at the top of the list.
This project very quickly went to the top of the list of that priority, and that's why we were able to rush it through the Stormwater Management Advisory Commission and the City Council and move quickly on this one.
They have given us a projected timeline of about 18 months to complete this project. We are number one on their stormwater remediation efforts.
The city is hoping to find a more permanent solution so that more people can live in and enjoy this historic neighborhood.
This is basically 120-year-old infrastructure, and maybe its time has come.
Luke Notstein, WRAL News, Raleigh.
I'd say that's an emergency. The city of Raleigh is hoping to find a solution for this project just as soon as possible. Governor Cooper is taking his budget proposal to schools around the state. This morning, he was at an elementary school in Rayford. He came to Scurlock Elementary in Hope County meeting with teachers and students. Governor Cooper proposes big funding increases for schools in his budget plan, including an average 18% pay raise for teachers. Republican lawmakers have called Cooper's full proposal unrealistic because of its cost, which tops $34 billion.
Still ahead, we are looking at the book banning issue from another angle, one that asks you to consider something beyond the literature. We're going to go in depth coming up. And as we go to break, let's take a live look at Lake Gaston. Always gorgeous this time of night, this time of year anyway. We get to see these gorgeous sunsets. Meteorologist Kat Campbell is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center tracking out a timeline for rain as the weekend approaches. Breaking into Live Center, two suspects have been arrested in connection with five armed robberies in Wake and Nash counties. We do have brand new mugshots to pop up and show you. On the left there is Deontay Lucas, a 20-year-old from Johnston County. On the right, Michael Angles of Bailey. That's in Nash County. Both of them are facing robbery and weapons charges. There was an incident in Nash County at a Dollar General. Again, they used guns in all of these cases. There were also robberies in Zebulon, Wendell, and Raleigh all over the past couple of months. Both of those men are locked up tonight.
Joe, thank you.
North Carolina schools continue to remove books from their libraries after parents complain. WRL is part of a group called the North Carolina Watchdog Reporting Network that requested records from every school system across the state to get their numbers. And tonight, I'd like to go in depth on the still growing efforts by parents to curate school libraries. But first, here's WRL education insider Emily Walkenhorst with a closer look at the numbers.
A growing number of challenges to books raises the question of who should decide whether kids have access to certain books. Since October, Cumberland County Schools has removed close to 100 young adult titles from its school library catalogs after a single complaint. Librarian Christy Sartain said that frustrated students.
And that's heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking that I had to tell them, somebody doesn't want you to read this book.
PEN America, a group that tracks school censorship, says many challenges object to books' references to homosexuality, transgender people, or the negative portrayal of some white characters. PEN America identified at least 50 organizations that are mobilizing around the danger of books and pushing for restrictions. Those groups have dozens of chapters in North Carolina. Some groups have lists of books they urge parents to challenge and talking points for those parents. So when a book is challenged in one place, it's often challenged in another.
So if you see a book that maybe is being banned in other places, you know, there's a chilling effect that happens.
One of the groups challenging books is Moms for Liberty. Wake County Chapter President Julie Page and several other parents filed police reports against the school board because they found some library books to be, quote, obscene. Page says her protests have nothing to do with censorship of people who have been discriminated against.
We truly believe in equality for every child, and not simply just equity.
Wake County School Librarian Julie Stiver said parents can talk with their children about the books they read or what books they don't want them to read instead of trying to remove books from libraries. She asked her students what they want others to know about some of the books in her library.
That book you gave me, I think it literally saved my life. That author gets me. The books in this space have made me love reading again. It's magical when a book tells you that you are no longer alone.
Emily Walkenhorst, WRL News.
All right. Thanks to Emily for that report. So what do you think? I mean, which side are you on? We have to polarize each other nowadays. You have to be on one side or another. Before you give me your answer, though, let me give you a little bit of context that could possibly bring us just a bit closer together with a statement. Censoring books is okay sometimes when it comes to kids. Well, hold on. If you disagree, don't get mad at me. Email the Supreme Court. They're the ones that came up with that. Here's how UNC law professor William Marshall explained it to me.
The standard for obscenity, for example, is a lot higher when you're dealing with adults than when you're dealing with distribution of sexually explicit materials to kids. In another context, for example, broadcasting that goes to children may be treated a little bit differently than broadcast that goes just to adults. So yes, there is a difference in the First Amendment.
So we're not talking about public libraries, we're talking about school libraries aimed directly at kids. So there is a standard, but what is that standard exactly? You know, the Supreme Court has stayed pretty vague on that one too, bringing us back to square one, right? There is no clear answer on where to draw your book banning line, which is why these debates rarely end. So instead of focusing on that standard tonight and where it should be, let's pivot to this study from the Common Sense Media Group in 2021 that found 38% of tweens and 84% of teens use social media. Many of them use it every single day. Now, when I read this study, it got me thinking. The gears were turning. And I would like to walk you through my thought process here and then get your response. And I want to start with a simple question. Does your kid have access to the internet? Do they ever get on social media or YouTube or something like that? No? You're one of the good parents out there? Okay, well, do they have friends maybe that do? No, again? Sure about that? Let me tell you a little story. You see, in 1993, my middle school library didn't have copies of Playboy magazine, as they shouldn't. I support that ban. Now, if you ask my parents back in 1993 if their son had seen a Playboy magazine, they would tell you definitively, no way. But would they be right? Not if you ask the two copies we had buried in a shoebox in our fort in the woods. No one knew except me and my neighbor, Robbie. Do you get my point, though? And you know what? That gives me an idea. Printed magazines. Maybe printed magazines should be the next battleground to protect our children. I'm pretty sure they rank right there alongside middle school libraries for where kids are getting their info nowadays, especially on delicate topics like sexuality. Now, hold on. I can already see the headlines out there. Hagerty calls for Playboys on the shelves of every middle school. No, not what I'm saying. I'm not saying this discussion is irrelevant, that it's not important. I'm just curious about the end game of these bans at middle school libraries. It would be like, having a crusade to ban alcohol, but you decide to focus all of your energy on putting Southern Comfort out of business. Okay. I mean, even if you succeed, okay, I guess I'm going to be left with the other 1 million more popular ways to get a drink. You see, this is the often unspoken part of this debate. The argument that these bans are frivolous and that these book ban debates have created a safe space for people to mask their personal bias or even bigotry under the guise of political discourse and protecting our children from being corrupted by the library. That said, I do realize there are reasonable people making reasonable arguments here who truly think our children need to be saved from influences that may corrupt them. And if that's you, if you're one of those reasonable people, consider this. I've done a lot of research on this topic and others like it. I've read countless studies and opinions. I've interviewed professors and lawyers and experts all over the years. And I've struggled in that time to find a moment in our history, regardless of the topic, where censorship is what saved the day. Let me know what you think. Bit of an opinion tonight, clearly. Send me an email at dan@wral.com. It's right there on your screen. Let me know what's on your mind, and we'll go in depth.
A reminder that Fort Bragg will soon become Fort Liberty. The sign at the Knox Street Gate has been stripped of all the letters, and it's coming down. Military leaders tell WREL the sign is obsolete because the Knox Street Gate is permanently closed. Soon, though, all signs that say Fort Bragg will change. The Defense Department says it will cost about $6 million to do that. Fort Bragg is one of 9 military installations across the country whose namesakes have ties to the Confederacy. The names must be changed by the end of the year. Meteorologist Kat Campbell joining us now in the WREL Severe Weather Center. Boy, we're looking at a beautiful live picture from Beaufort, and we're not going to see this time tomorrow night, are we, Kat?
No, we are not, Deborah, unfortunately. And it's a last glimmer of the sunset here over Wake County, the tall tower camera. You can see a lot more clouds filling in tonight, and this is ahead of tomorrow's system. Ahead of the rain tomorrow, it's going to be warm and quite windy. We could see some winds gusting up to 30, 35 miles per hour midday into the early afternoon. And I know it's been windy several days this week, but this wind forecast would be the strongest all week long. So it's really going to be quite blustery out there. That could be an issue if you have an umbrella with you tomorrow. It could be blowing the umbrella inside out. So you may want to opt for a raincoat or a pretty strong umbrella if you have a couple. Looking ahead, here's our chance for rain. It's this front that moves in from the west, and it's going to, of course, bring some cooler air behind it for the weekend. After all, it is a cold front. As for the rain timing, the first half of the day tomorrow is dry. We're partly to mostly cloudy during the day. Some possible clearing by noon. So through about lunchtime, we should remain mostly dry, about a 20% chance for rain. A few spotty showers during the afternoon. It's not widespread. It's not heavy, but don't be surprised if you do run into a quick shower during the afternoon. This steady rain and the heavier rain and the more widespread rain, that gets here around dinner time and is likely to last into your Friday night. So if you've got dinner plans, if you're going to be out and about late Friday night, make sure that you have your umbrella on hand. You can see the rain is widespread all the way overnight into early Saturday morning. 6 a.m. still some showers from Raleigh, the Sand Hills, Points East. It's mainly light rain at that point. And then by 8 a.m. some showers still left in our eastern counties, but we should quickly dry out in the triangle, I think by 8, 9 a.m. Saturday. So most of the day Saturday ends up being dry, but you may wake up to the morning rain. After that, temperatures really tumble. 58 the high Saturday, 50 on Sunday, even 29 by next Monday morning. Temperatures do rebound a little bit as we head into next week. After a couple of freezing mornings, high temperatures likely to climb back into the 60s today. So if you like today's weather, we got more of it down the road.
That's more like spring. Thanks, Kat.
There is a new skate park we want to tell you about. It's going to be the first in downtown Raleigh. Today, Skate Raleigh held a pop-up skate park at Union Station Plaza. The skate park will be in the Smoky Hollows will tell you all about it coming up.
From St. Patrick's Day fun to monster trucks, we have a lot happening this weekend.
WRAL lifestyle editor Kathy Hanrahan has our out and about bests.
Families can enjoy a St. Patrick's Day themed scavenger hunt in downtown Raleigh on Saturday. Search the City is hosting this event starting in Moore Square at 2 p.m. Teams will search downtown for hidden green shamrocks. The winner will get a gift basket with goodies from local businesses. Tickets start at $10 for children and $25 for adults. On Saturday and Sunday, Monster Jam returns to PNC Arena. The show features giant 12,000-pound monster trucks flying through the air. Tickets start at $20. And on Sunday, Durham Central Park will host a food truck rodeo from noon to 4 p.m. There will be lots of trucks and drink vendors on hand. Admission is free. These are just a few ways to get out and about this weekend. Kathy Hanrahan, WRAL News.
Admission is free is always good, like the new skate park that's coming to the Triangle, and it's going to be the first in downtown Raleigh.
Yeah, today Skate Raleigh held a pop-up skate park at Union Station Plaza. The skate park will be in the Smoky Hollow section of downtown. Skate Raleigh is breaking ground next week, and they hope to open the skate park by May. A fundraiser for the park is planned for April 16th at Union Station. Great day for it.
You a skateboarder?
Back in the day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Well, I didn't do all the flips and stuff.
I want to see some pictures, videos, something. I know you do too, right?
I have proof somewhere.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Our next newscast at 10 on Fox 50 and at 11 on WREL. We'll see you then. Have a great night.
Keep watching WREL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.